Professor Deborah Bird. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are produced by the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin, zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
And this is WUSB in Stony Brook. Please, please stand by for the next program. It's kind of embarrassing. We've forgotten what's supposed to be on the air right now, but stand by. We'll figure it out.
Hey, Kevin.
What?
I'm stuck on this last question. Leave me alone. What radio station has rock, jazz, bluegrass, rap, reggae, soul, oldies, blues, folk, polka, and classical music, along with telephone call-in shows, sports specials, live concerts, exclusive interviews, late-breaking and alternative news, school closings, and more free-form programs than any other station on Long Island?
If you don't know, you butthead, I'm not going to tell you.
Come on, that's not fair. I never knew there was a radio station that did all that. I mean, they've got everything.
There's one thing they don't have.
What's that?
Commercials.
No way. They've got to have commercials to make money.
They don't make money. They make radio shows. Nobody there gets paid.
Sounds neat. All that cool programming and no commercials.
Yeah, but they need help from their listeners. They got to buy a new transmitter because their old one's going to kill over.
That's terrible.
I know, but if everyone pulls together and sends them some money, they'll get a brand new transmitter and the signals will be better than ever.
Wow, I wish I could help.
You can. Every little bit counts.
Too bad I don't know the name of their radio station.
It's WUSB, okay? Long Island's first station of the 90s. There, are you happy?
Yeah. We're also in big trouble.
WUSB is one of the most unusual radio stations around. That's probably why you're listening to us. We want to stay original, make our signal stronger, and keep 90.1 FM commercial-free. It's important that you show your support during our one-week radiothon beginning March 18th. With your help, WUSB will be able to get a new transmitter. For more information or to get involved, call 632-6498. The program is India Hour.
Good evening, and welcome to the Indian Music Program here at WUSB, Stony Brook.
I'm sorry, I'm told the program is not India Hour for tonight. India Hour comes your way tomorrow night. A little mix up here, we'll have it straightened out. Ah, yes, much better.
Hola.
I don't know Spanish. This couldn't be the right show either, because I don't know Spanish. This is not Onda Nueva. No, Onda Nueva was on earlier today at 3 o'clock. I'm sure. Someone want to help me out here? What's supposed to be on the air? The Knicks beat the Astros in tonight's exhibition game. An exclusive interview with Stony Brook's coach of the new exhibition ping pong team. All this and more on tonight's sports section. That is, if tonight was Sunday, you would probably be hearing that, because sports section is on at this time tomorrow. Oh, yes, much better.
I can dig it.
Yes, this is not Ed Davis, nor Joel Itzkowitz, nor is this the Blues Show. It's not even Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. That's wrong, too. So let's step into a cocktail party and figure the whole thing out. We appreciate your patience. Sometimes this radio station can be like a maze. There's just so many things going on. I'm very happy we have this part of the station where we can sort of relax. It's kind of like that place on the Enterprise where you can go and sort things out. In case you're curious who the bartender is here at the USB radio station here at Stony Brook, I'm being waved at. I'm not supposed to tell. But you'd be surprised. All right, we have it figured out now.
Has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Thank you.
3, 2, 3, 2, 4, 3, 5, 5, 4, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Did you say 9?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
And it's 13 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is brain damaged. Thanks very much to the listener that helped us out on that. Really embarrassing to lose track of the program that's supposed to be on the air, but it does happen occasionally. You know, we do have other things to think about sometimes. But that's no excuse. We should have thought of it. It's 14 minutes after 10 o'clock. Did I mention that? No, I said it was 13 minutes after 10 o'clock, so I'm not being repetitious. We have a couple of things to talk about here, the most important being an epidemic of spring fever. Yes, an epidemic of spring fever is spreading east. Most of the nation enjoyed spring-like weather on Saturday afternoon as temperatures climbed in the east. There were some sore heads, though, that did not enjoy it. And temperatures remained unseasonably warm over the central and southern Great Plains and the southwest. In parts of Texas and the desert southwest, it was definitely hot. Yeah, the temperature at Childress or something like that in Texas was just 1 degree shy of reaching the triple digits. Whew. But the 99-degree high still gave Childress, whatever the hell they call that place, the honor of having the nation's high on Saturday. For the third day in a row, there was a long list of record high temperatures in the southwestern states all 3 days. Most of the old records were set in 1972. In New Mexico, Ruidoso, whatever that is, with a 78-degree reading, and Los Alamos with a 73-degree reading, both had their highest temperatures ever recorded for the month of March. And today, record-high temperatures extended as far east as Mobile, Alabama, as temperatures reached the 80s over inland areas of the central Gulf Coast states. I should point out at this stage that you may have noticed USB pays more attention to weather than almost any other radio station around. Now, you just won't get this kind of in-depth weather reporting of the radio stations. Whether or not you want it is immaterial. The fact is you're getting it. And this is a country of choice. So we must offer all choices, whether they are needed or not. Which reminds me, there will be a reading of the Suffolk County phone book next week at this time, so you might want to jot that down. Anyway, temperatures reached the 70s over the Ohio Valley. The snow cover in southern Missouri that was over a foot deep at the beginning of the week was almost completely wiped out by temperatures in the 70s on Saturday. Now, can you imagine that? Some snow on the ground with temperatures in the 70s? Not something you see very often. Snow melt continued to cause a few rivers to roll out of their banks and cause some lowland flooding in northeast Oregon and southwest Idaho. But according to the Associated Press, winter is not over yet. That's not our opinion. We are simply reporting what the Associated Press tells us. They say winter is not over yet. Now, the switchboard's lighting up. This is not something we're saying. This is the Associated Press's opinion, their statements, their inflammatory remarks, not ours. Ours will come later. Winter is not over yet. Very cold air covers most of Canada, waiting for a weather pattern that might bring it into the United States. Much colder weather is expected in the northern Rockies and much of the Dakotas toward the middle of this coming week. Even on Saturday, high temperatures only reached the 30s over northern Minnesota, North Dakota, and northern Montana. In northern Montana, freezing drizzle was reported in Cut Bank. Havre, and Great Falls throughout most of the day. A dense fog and freezing drizzle advisory will remain in effect for a portion of northwest Montana on Saturday night. Perhaps I should repeat that in case anyone's planning on going out there. A dense fog and freezing drizzle advisory will remain in effect for a portion of northwest Montana Saturday night. I don't suppose it's realistic to assume that our signal manages to make it out to northwest Montana. However, if anyone is out in northwest Montana and they are picking up these words, you can give us a call and we will be happy to put you on the air. Hey, what the hell, you know? I mean, you're from northwest Montana. You deserve that much. While most of the nation was dry, showers occurred in portions of the northwest and the northeast. A heavier rainfall during the 6 hours ending at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time included a quarter inch at Shelter Cove, California, 0.23, if you want to be exact, and around a tenth of an inch in Seattle, Washington, and the actual figure on that is 0.14. Eugene, Oregon got 0.13 of an inch, Olympia, Washington, 0.11, Fort Lewis, Washington, 0.11, Bellingham, Washington, 0.10, and Tacoma, Washington, 0.09. If you want those figures repeated, you can call us later at the station and we will pass them along to you. If you send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, of course, we'll send you the entire readout here. Snow showers occurred over northeastern New York State and parts of northern New England, most of it melting as it fell. There is more to this. So regrettably, we don't have the rest of it yet. I guess it will come over the teletype later on today. And some boring stuff. We have some news. Not nearly as interesting as the weather, but let's see what we have here. Officials confirm that the commander of the USS Vincennes and his wife had received at least one threatening phone call about last year's downing of an Iranian airliner. Captain Will Rogers and his wife Sharon have gone into hiding one day after she escaped unharmed when a bomb gutted the van she was driving in San Diego. To make matters worse, the couple had purchased satanic verses last week, and that was sitting in prominent view in their living room window. All right, that's not true. But investigators say they're looking into the possibility that the bombing was in retaliation for the airliner shootdown that Rogers ordered. In the Canadian paper mill town of Dryden, Ontario, a local sports arena has been transformed into a temporary morgue. It's being used to store bodies of the people killed yesterday when an Air Ontario jet crashed shortly after taking off from Dryden for Winnipeg. Most of the bodies were found today in thigh-deep snow in a wooded area. A twin-engine plane has crashed in Manassas, Virginia, killing all five people aboard. Police say the plane had been taken from Delaware to Virginia to be shown to prospective buyers.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson has spent another day joining striking Eastern Airlines machinists on the picket line. Jackson was at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport 2 days after getting a rousing reception from the strikers in Miami. Jackson vowed to march until victory is won. Eastern has been all but shut down during the strike, but plans to resume 40 round-trip flights tomorrow and Monday, including service to 13 Latin American cities from Miami. Into the second week of the Eastern strike, there's been some more corporate changes by Eastern owner Texas Air. Eastern Express, a non-union commuter carrier that fed Eastern flights, has been renamed Continental Express. Fascinating. And Jonas Savimbi, the Angolan rebel leader backed by the U.S., is being accused by some former followers of torturing and killing dissidents in his ranks. A spokesman for Savimbi is denying the allegations. The spokesman contends that Angola's Soviet-supported government is waging a campaign to discredit the rebels. Dissension is being heard from within the Soviet government. President Gorbachev's strongest Politburo rival today publicly broke with Gorbachev's call for more individual farming. The comments in a Soviet TV interview come just 4 days before the Soviet Communist Party is to revamp agricultural policy. And finally, for the first time in a dozen years, an escape is reported at the U.S. penitentiary at Leavenworth, Kansas. Missing is Robert Allen Litchfield, who was serving 140 years for armed robbery and a previous escape. Authorities won't elaborate, but say Litchfield used a disguise to walk out the front door of Leavenworth. It's currently 3 degrees Celsius, that's 37 on the Fahrenheit scale. We're expecting it to be mostly cloudy tonight with the chance of a few showers. Low will be in the mid-30s. Chance of rain, 40%. Sunday, mostly cloudy, becoming windy in the afternoon, high in the mid-40s. And those winds could get up to 20 miles per hour, even gustier. That's tomorrow afternoon. Sunday night, clear and colder, high or at a low in the mid-20s. And on Monday, mostly sunny and cool, high in the low 40s. Again, 3 degrees Celsius, 37 on the Fahrenheit scale. Good evening to you. This is Eric Corley with you until midnight with the program that we now have, yes, established as being called Brain Damage, coming your way every Saturday night from 10 to 12. Take phone calls, talk about pressing issues such as the weather. And sometimes we have special features like we do tonight. Yes, as you know, we get tapes from all over the world sent to this radio station, and we just got one in just yesterday, in fact. Very popular program that we have aired here, and in fact, it's not aired anywhere else that we can think of except the obvious place that it comes from. I am, of course, referring to your program, Moscow Mailbag, where you can ask all kinds of questions to the folks in Moscow, and they will answer you. Now, if you are interested in sending mail to them, the address is given at the end of this feature. You can mention that you heard it here on WUSB in Stony Brook. And it's not that expensive to send mail over there. It's like, you know, 40 cents or something. So you can send them a letter and ask whatever question you want to ask. But hopefully they won't be as silly as the questions people ask when they call us. And then after that, we'll be taking phone calls and talking about other things. 632-6901. So, stay tuned. Enjoy Moscow Mailbag here on Brain Damage.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. And here's Joe Adamoff answering your questions. We start today's program with a letter from Dr. George Angel from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, who writes, "Why not limit high jobs, like those of president and party chief, to 4 years in the Soviet Union? Why are Soviet leaders in for life? Why is this not limited by law?"
I'm afraid you're a bit behind times, Dr. Angel. Last summer, the 19th Party Conference passed a resolution that the General Secretary can be in office for no more than 2 terms. That means 10 years. Now, had we introduced this when Soviet government was born, the Stalin's term of office would have expired in 1934, and there would have been no repressions and no rule of tyranny, wrote one of our leading papers. Now, our president, who heads the Supreme Soviet or Parliament, may also be in office for no more than two terms, and may at any time, I think this is very important, may at any time be recalled by a secret vote of the Congress of People's Deputies.
More from Dr. George Angel. In Romania, for example, power is shared by wife, son, brothers of the wife, and about 32 relatives. What is your opinion on this problem?
You see, what Romania or any other socialist country does is their business, and we do not want to meddle in their internal affairs. For instance, Hungary has introduced a multi-party system. What do you want us to do? Tell them to stop it or to go ahead with it? That's not our business. It's their business. There was a time, I think you remember it, when the socialist countries were labeled Soviet satellites. But I can assure you, they are no more our satellites than England or Federal Germany are your satellites. You know, not so long ago, we had a taste of something similar. As far as nepotism is concerned. Brezhnev's son was a deputy minister for foreign trade, and Daddy, with his 5 gold stars of hero, awarded his son with the Order of Lenin. His son-in-law, Brezhnev's son-in-law, became a 3-star police general almost overnight, and has now been sentenced, guess for what? Corruption. And I think rightly so. You want my opinion on nepotism. My personal attitude is negative, just as yours is, I'm sure. Of course, if a son or daughter is talented, I don't see why he or she can't follow in Dad's footsteps. The head of the Tupolev Aircraft Designing Bureau is Tupolev Jr., or the conductor and director of the Army Song and Dance Company is Alexandrov Jr. We have something on a larger scale when sons of VIPs tend to go into diplomatic service or other prestigious jobs. And, you know, our press has written about this on more than one occasion and in no uncertain terms.
James Tversky from Monessen, Pennsylvania, writes the following. I'm doing a report on women in the military. Women who are on traditional male roles such as infantry, fighter pilot, naval SEALs, etc. Do you have any information on this subject?
I'll have to disappoint you. We do not draft women into the armed services. In fact, we're cutting back our armed services nowadays, and for instance, college students will not be drafted into the army. Of course, during the war, women can be called up. By women, I mean such professions as doctors, radio operators, interpreters. But today, of course, there may be a handful, not more, a handful of exceptions. For instance, the wife of our Kosmonaut Popovich is not only a poet, but a test pilot. It was different, of course, during the war. We had women's bomber regiments, even women's fighter regiments. Women in anti-aircraft artillery, women's snipers. Why, a former woman sniper even works at Radio Moscow to this day. We had many women soldiers in the guerrillas. A story I well remember from the war is when a famous Nazi fighter ace was shot down, and then he asked our command to see the pilot who shot him down. What was his surprise when a slim girl walked into the room? This is a true story.
David Craig from Shelbyville, Indiana, wants to know, what is the favorite beverage of Russian teens? The teenagers in our school live on Coca-Cola.
They do, huh? Well, what is the favorite drink? I think they're carbonated drinks of all kinds that come in bottles that sometimes look like champagne bottles. Some are called disco, others are called vecherni or evening. They also like Fanta, the orange drink, and of course Pepsi. In the summer, many drink kvass. It's an ancient Russian beverage that dates back to the days of Peter the Great. It's brewed from rye bread.
The next letter is from Alan G. Carmack from Logan, Utah. My parents immigrated from Lithuania to the USA early this century. Do you have any information on Lithuania?
You know, Alan, even those that knew Lithuania before the war would not recognize it today. There are things, whatever one's political views, which cannot be denied today. Like, for instance, today they have 10 times more college students than they did prior to the war. The Lithuanian Academy of Sciences has 12 research institutes and dozens of scientific establishments. Today, 80% of the population in Lithuania are Lithuanians, 7% are Poles, 9% are Russians. Economically, it's an advanced republic, produces no end of things. It produces high-precision machine tools, trawlers, floating docks, computers, turbines, what have you. And consumer goods account for about 40% of Lithuania's industrial output. It also makes television sets, tape recorders, furniture. And much of what it produces, it exports to about 80 countries. Today, the majority of the rural population lives in modern agricultural communities which have a variety of architectural designs. I'm stressing this because Lithuanian architects are famous throughout the Soviet Union. Or take its athletes, the other extreme, Wilhelmina Bartaskiene was the first woman in the world to jump 7 meters, and Lina Kachushite is a world record holder in swimming. Or just think of the wonderful song festivals where 20,000 singers and musicians, mostly amateurs, occupy a huge flat platform at the same time. Or when twice a year 80-year-old composer Viktoras Kuprevičius plays the carillon of 35 bells. He plays Verdi, Tchaikovsky, Mozart, Grieg, many other composers. I've been to Lithuania, and I can assure you there is freedom of worship in that country. I've seen it myself. Today the Republic is consolidating its sovereignty, its ethnic identity, which I think is a sign of the times.
John Holman from Billerica, Massachusetts, has a question concerning the weather. Are you receiving much snow? We have had only 1 inch so far.
You know, in just the first 2 months, we had more snow than the norm for the whole season. There were several days at the beginning of winter when I could not drive out of my home. It was so deep. But you know, all of January and the beginning of February, the temperature was above freezing. On February 8th, here in Moscow, it was 42 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 6 degrees Celsius. You know, I don't remember such a winter. Some friends from the States were here not long ago, and they expected a real Siberian-type winter, and what do you know, they found everything melting in puddles everywhere.
Scott Sadowski from Catonsville, Maryland, wants to know, what's to stop some sort of cult of personality from forming?
At the beginning of this program, I mentioned that no one can stay in office more than 2 terms. Then the fact that by secret vote, the president may be recalled. I think these are significant breaks. Then, mind you, there's glasnost, openness, freedom of expression. You cannot turn the wheel of history back. The genie has been let out of the bottle. Now, the past has been exposed in all its horrors, in great detail, and in all its aspects. And today, our people are no more the speechless nuts and bolts that they once were. And they cannot be manipulated, I assure you. They've tasted democracy, or the beginning of democracy. The Parliament, the Supreme Soviet, is no more the mute rubber stamp it once was. The security bodies are under strict government and party control. we're making our courts and our prosecutors independent and subject to only the law. We are working towards making our laws more humane. So I think there's about as much chance of a revival of Stalinism as the United States returning to the rule of the British Crown.
Here's a letter from Kevin Bikert from Houston, Texas. Do most people listen to shortwave in the USSR or local stations for music and news? Very few people in the U.S. listen to shortwaves.
Yeah, that I know. People here do listen to local stations for news and music. And when I say news, I do not mean just local news, but international news, too. Don't forget, we have 15 republics, all with their own languages, their own ethnic traditions. And we have other ethnic subdivisions, too, besides the 15 major republics, speaking their own languages. Would I surprise you if I told you that radio broadcasting is conducted in over 70 languages of our people? So a man, say, in Tbilisi, Soviet Georgia, in the Caucasus, switches on a local station and hears Laparakops Tbilisi, which is the equivalent of this is Tbilisi. Usually there are two or three local channels on AM, FM, and long waves, plus the choice of at least two Moscow channels in Russian on AM and long waves, because we have a network of very powerful synchronized transmitters across the country. Now, as for shortwaves, you probably know we stopped jamming all foreign broadcasts, including Radio Liberty, which is not too friendly, as I've said in the past, to put it mildly. I know quite a lot of people that listen to shortwaves here.
Gary Smith, who lives in Moore Park, California, would like to know more on the Soviet space program.
Well, on April 29th, the present crew will return to Earth. The next crew will work until sometime this fall. Incidentally, did you know that we have spent over 5,000 days in space, that is, our cosmonauts? The United States astronauts have spent something like 1,800 days in space. Now, the future of space research. As before, permanent orbital stations will be our high road in space. We see factories in space which will produce new materials, new medicines, which cannot be made on Earth. We hope to see powerful orbital electric stations. We feel sure there will be permanent bases on the moon that could produce rare materials from lunar soil, and most probably a manned flight to Mars sometime after the turn of the century.
And to conclude this edition of Moscow Mailbag, we have two questions from Jim Reuter from Ann Arbor, Michigan. How is glasnost affecting the common Russian?
Glasnost means openness. It means freedom of expression. How is it affecting the man on the street? Well, he knows the truth about the past and the present. He knows what the shortcomings are. Therefore, he knows in what direction to apply his efforts. He is better informed in all respects. And what's very important, he is not afraid to speak his mind, to criticize, to put forward concrete suggestions. He knows where his country stands economically in relation to the rest of the world. He realizes that justice has, to a great extent, come to his much-suffering country. He regards his country as part of the world we all live in and must share. He knows that we are not something apart from the rest of the world. And I personally believe that glasnost is one of the greatest things that has come about in the Soviet Union.
What does Mr. Gorbachev hope to make the Soviet state into?
He wants to boost our economy through perestroika, through restructuring, and as a result give our people a very much higher standard of living. After all, that's what socialism is all about. He wants to make the Soviet Union into a truly democratic socialist state. So, wish us every success.
Joe Adamoff answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR.
Yes, they have a very nice address, I must say, but they didn't say what I was hoping they were going to say at the end. They always have that little phrase. I guess it's only when the lady's doing it. She always says, you couldn't do better than to write us that letter, or something like that. Well, we'll say you'll have a real ball if you give us a call at 632-6901. And do it now, area code 516. Let us know what you thought of Radio Moscow here on USB, which we sometimes put on, and just to see what's going on. What I would really like, I would love this, it would make me so proud of USB listeners, if I heard one of your names on there. All you got to do is write them a letter with a question on it that they will answer, and then when we play it back some day in the future, it'll say from such and such in Stony Brook, New York, or Rocky Point, or Center Reach, or something like that, and just think of how proud you'll be, not only having your name read over the air on USB, but on all of Radio Moscow, aired all throughout the world, probably in different languages, too. You'll no doubt have an FBI file opened up on you quicker than you can say any word in the English language, so be sure that you do that. Give them a little bit of extra work. Our number again, 632-6901. Plenty of open lines. So I'd like to hear your comments, and we'll go into a couple other things that we have on the planning boards here on WUSB. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you up until midnight. Again, the number is 632-6901. I hate to think that I put people to sleep by playing that. I mean, I thought it was pretty interesting, especially when they were talking about the transmitters and how they have different radio stations for all different languages and the sheer number of different cultures they've got over there. It's quite a big place. And for them to actually cover it with radio waves is quite a task in itself. And as far as I know, USB is the only radio station around here that plays things that they send us. We do it only because we feel people out there are interested in this. So prove us right. Give us a call. Tell us you're interested. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Henrik Goldberger.
Now, why is it you're always the first? Well, you're one of the first people to always call, but, you know, it bothers me. And I'll tell you why. It bothers me because where are all the other kids out there, you know? Aren't they, don't they have brains, or are they all watching, you know, TV or something?
Watching TV.
You're watching TV?
What? No, well, they are.
But I mean, you can watch TV and listen to the radio at the same time, you know?
No, but they don't know that.
Boy, well, how do we get through to them, you know?
I mean, Eric, I hate to say it, but it isn't the most popular radio station.
Well, gosh, you know, you really hit me where it hurts on that one. Well, you know, I'll tell you this. Nobody here at USB is in a popularity contest. We're not exactly the rejects of the world, but we do have a fair number of losers in our midst. But, you know, we're proud of that fact. You know, there's something kind of chic in being a loser these days. You know, because the 80s was so much the me decade that everybody felt like they were achieving so much. You know, this up-and-coming junk that you hear all the time. Well, some of us aren't up and coming, and we're damn proud of that fact.
Yeah.
And we all sort of migrate here to USB and try to share that with our listeners, the downtrodden, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty interesting.
What is? Oh, yes, the radio program. Totally forgot about it. Yes.
Remember last week I had that thing about wrestling at Stony Brook?
You had an idea that for the fundraiser we should have a heavyweight wrestling. Well, yes, you know, I tossed that idea around, and it's something we still could possibly do, although I don't know if it's necessarily good to do while we're raising funds here, because, you know, Undoubtedly, heavyweight wrestlers will want to come up to the station and have a tour, and we'll be having a lot of activity up here during that that week, so we don't want to make it harder than we have to. But, Andrew, it is a very good idea.
Thanks a lot. No, because wrestling is on tonight at 11:30.
Well, what are you going telling people that for? You're going to lose all the listeners, all the remaining listeners.
No, don't worry. The other eight people won't mind.
The other eight people. Oh, that's just great. You're really making my night here.
No.
Well, before you say anything else, I'm going to tell you to go back and listen to your radio more intently and wait for the next call to come in.
No, because I'm saying that because you should see it and, you know, grade it and see if it's really entertaining. And, you know, then you can tell, like, your people who run the station, you know, I saw wrestling last night, and it was great.
Oh, you're saying I should watch it?
What? Yeah.
Well, how can I watch it when I'm doing a radio show?
Well, it's on until 1 a.m.
It's on until 1 a.m., huh? Okay, well,
NBC.
NBC, I thought they had Saturday night on.
What?
Oh, that's right, they alternate, don't
once
they?
Once a month, wrestling's on, and it takes the place of Saturday night's main event.
Is it true that a lot of people who are into Saturday night are also into wrestling for some reason?
Well, the ratings, can you believe, are 30 times better than Saturday Night Live?
It makes you wonder where we're going.
Same guy who produces it.
Lorne Michaels or something?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's a revelation. I want to thank you for calling, and we've got some more calls we're going to go to.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, our number is 632-6901. And we're going to get to musical requests and programming suggestions. From March 18th to the 25th, WUSB will once again be asking for your participation in a different way. For the first time in our history, we need to ask listeners for financial support. We have to buy a new transmitter, and we want to start improving our signal. So for 8 days in March, we'll be presenting all kinds of special fundraising programming. We're calling it Radiothon 89. We hope we can count on your support. The Radiothon begins on Saturday, March 18th, and lasts until Saturday, March 25th. For more details, keep listening to 90.1 FM or call 632-6498.
What number?
That's area code 516-632-6498.
Yes.
It's 12 minutes to 11 o'clock. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Plunge into the depths of despair.
Now, let me first of all preface what you're about to say, sir, with a general rule that we are starting here at the radio station. When people call us up, we prefer not to have introductions to their call. We'd rather they say something like, hello, Eric, how are you, or something like that, or, I'm calling from wherever, rather than have this big, long, drawn-out introduction, you know. It's sort of, well, you see, the reason for this, and... We've had some comments from the hierarchy in various parts of USB structures. You know, the people we never even see around here. They've handed down a decision that such statements lead to long drawn out personality conflicts, and that's the last thing we want here on the radio station. So,
psychiatrists, an army of psychiatrists couldn't sedate him. Rubber rooms couldn't hold him. It's Big Jim Doomsayer.
Well, you know, now you've gone and done exactly what I asked not to do, and one has to wonder where this conversation will go as a result.
But the thing is, this station is WUSB and is not controlled just slightly by the FCC. We can't use profanities. Now, wait a minute. The name of this show is Brain Damage, Eric. I'm getting very upset with you.
Well, what better place to make arbitrary decisions?
This is Brain Damage. This is the reason I do these things. Remember, this program is lacking in character, and I try to bring character into it, but it doesn't always work.
Well, I think we have quite a bit of character already.
You know,
not to say your character isn't welcome.
I hate to bring this subject up. I mean, you're probably going to hang up on me. But you hang up on Mr. Radio all the time. I mean, he may say dumb things, but the name of the show is Brain Damage, and we have to give equal time, you know.
Well, that's true, but there's still several million other people in our listening range that have not been given equal time. By giving equal time to the same people all the time, we're not giving equal time to all the other people that never get it.
That's true.
So that justifies hanging up on anyone at any time.
Oh. Well, you know, I don't always agree with what he has to say, but...
Well, I agree with half of that.
The character. But I got a letter in the mail here.
Well, how about that? You know, it's possible for anybody to get a letter. From who?
David Duke.
Oh, no. No, not the Nazi.
Oh, this guy is great.
Wait a minute. How did you manage to get a letter from him?
This guy is, well, I hate to say it, but it's a runoff letter.
But how did you manage to get a letter from David Duke?
I wrote him a letter in support of his views.
You're not serious, are you? You didn't
write
to a Klansman running in Louisiana.
You don't understand.
Who marched around the 60s with a swastika on his arm. You didn't write to this person and told your support.
Yeah, but the thing is, he boasts nonviolence. He supports nonviolence.
Oh, yeah, well, the Nazis, as we all know, were some of the greatest nonviolent people of all time. They believed in civil disobedience.
Well, remember.
Just sort of leaning on your fellow man a little bit until he smothers.
Well, I have. He sent me a newspaper called the National Association for the Advancement of White People.
I know all about it.
And,
Well, as much as I want to.
I could send this to you if you would promise to put it in my mailbox over in Chemistry.
Why don't you just Xerox off a copy so that I can have one to wrap around the neck of some people.
It has some interesting stuff in it that I never thought about, you know.
Well, make me a copy, because I would like to see it. I also understand he puts out a newsletter.
I don't know how I can make a copy of this. It's kind of...
Put it in a Xerox machine and press the button.
Hmm?
How would you make a copy of anything?
I don't know if it'll fit on the Kodak over there.
Well, there's only one way to find out, you know.
Well, this is pretty interesting.
Write to the manufacturer and ask, and then wait for the response, and then when you get
the
response,
disobey it. Can I read the first paragraph
on
the first page?
Can he do that? Hold on.
He's asking.
Hold on. No, you can't make that decision?
It's a non-profit organization.
Hold on. Can you call him? Is it too late? It is too late. All right, do we have a proxy?
It's not fair to say no.
Hold on. We're trying to reach a decision.
On the Lister's show, who I praise for that.
Hold on. The channels of communication aren't quite open. Yeah, I got one right here. Hold on. Yep, you can tell us.
I don't believe this.
Go ahead.
Just the first paragraph of the new white minority. Now, just remember, folks out there.
What do you mean? The white minority in this country?
Well, why don't you let me read this and then...
Must be a different shade of white. Okay, go ahead.
Maybe you'll see a new light. You know, whatever, you may live in a lily white neighborhood.
A new blinding light. Go ahead.
Now, wait. Well, let me just say that the views expressed here are not necessarily those of Big Jim Doomsayer.
And let me say right here, the views expressed here are definitely not anything close to my views. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. A dramatic change is taking place in America. Every minute of every day, Americans' population is becoming darker through high non-white birth rates and uncontrolled immigration. White people are becoming replaced by blacks, browns, and yellows. In 40 to 50 years, but a moment in the life of a nation, white people will become the new minority in America. That's the first paragraph of NAAWP News.
And a good part for the organ music to come up, yeah. Continue.
Yeah. Well, they have a picture on the front here of a white lady holding a white baby. It says, warning, endangered species.
Oh, give me a break.
There are many... conversationalist groups working diligently to save such forms of life as the blue whale, the snail daughter, and the redwood tree, but there is no creature on earth more beautiful or facing a greater threat than the white race. If we can work for the well-being of animals and trees, how can we ignore the threat to our own people?
Hold on, you figured our machine here.
What more can I say?
We have a threshold of racism that we can't exceed.
That's not racism, did I say?
When you exceed the limit. Oh, boy.
Did I say anything about racism tonight? I am not a racist.
This makes us all feel better.
It's right. I personally am funding the... What is that? A lot of minorities...
Affirmative action. Yeah, I don't agree with affirmative action myself, but How can you actually listen to that kind of garbage?
Oh, he talks about affirmative action in here, about an interview he had. That was interesting. I wish I had highlighted that. Oh, affirmative action is patently unfair to better qualified whites who are working and studying harder. Instead of calling these programs discrimination on the basis of race, which is exactly what they are, the government tries to justify the practice by calling it affirmative action. Kind of like hearing your doctor say, I've got good news for you, Joe. You have affirmative syphilis. And he goes on with more and more.
As far as I'm concerned, affirmative action is unfair, but I think it does a lot more harm to black people than to white people, because it gives the unfair impression that if you're black, you're only in an equal position because of affirmative action, and that's certainly not true. Equality should apply across the board. Of course, when you've had inequality for centuries, it's not easy to just suddenly start being equal. So sometimes the seesaw has to go back and forth a couple of times. I'm of the belief that maybe we've reached a stage where things can start leveling off a little bit. So that's as far as I come agreeing to that, though.
I'm funding illegitimate babies in welfare, and he points that out, and he's absolutely right, and nobody that I can remember in my lifetime had the guts to speak out against it. Nobody. And he is speaking out against it.
Well, what does illegitimate babies in welfare have to do with racial issues?
Well, I mean, that's how they, we can become a minority.
It's a question of rich versus poor, and, you know, if most of the poor people happen to be black, that's not a racial issue.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole world seems to be just like we always talk about. The people that have the less money are the ones who are making the biggest mess out of the place by having more kids than they can support and this and that.
Well, it goes with education. If you don't supply people with education, then yes, you're right. They do tend to cause problems. But is that their fault? I don't think so. If you provide education to people and
that's true, I agree with that.
Suitable living conditions, then I think you'll have a better situation overall.
But there's a lot of people running around with textbook knowledge that aren't very smart, if you know what I mean. Textbook knowledge. They can pass tests, this and that, but they can never put it together into an abstract.
That's true, but there's also a lot of very evil people who are about as educated as they can possibly be and who have very nice bank books, too, that are making things a lot more miserable for everybody and a lot more threatening for everybody than these poor people are.
For instance. Give me a for instance.
Well, I don't want to name names, but... The people that are in control, and I don't want to sound like, you know, one of these weekend leftists.
Radio. You can put that under your hat on that. I would agree with you because commercial radio is manipulated by bureaucrats in high places who say, well, this song is going to go on the air on all stations across the country, and we're going to pump it out, and people are going to buy it because we're going to pump it out until they're sick of it.
Well, you know, I don't know how we got into radio, but I'm talking about things like the Dow Chemical Company, you know,
we need those chemicals for
I'm talking about companies that have no regard for either the environment or the people. That's, in my eyes, a lot worse than people who aren't educated that don't know what to do. These people are educated, they know how to get around the system, and they're causing infinitely worse problems to society.
I don't know. Those are short-term problems, I think. I think that the welfare system that he talks about is causing long-term problems. Problems that should be put under control, and he wants to put them under control. But I don't know how he's going to do it, but somebody has to do it.
Well, do you know people who are on welfare?
Rockaway?
Do you know people who are on welfare? Do you have any friends who are on welfare?
Well, we were on it years ago.
Then you must know it's no picnic. It's nothing to be to strive for.
Got off it. I mean, you know, we were on it years ago because, you know, until I lost his job in the 60s, things were tough back then.
Uh-huh.
You know,
Apart from the... From the feeling of helplessness that you're given by your friends and by society, and as a rule, you're put through hell every month or so through recertification and things like that.
Well, he points out that the way the welfare system's set up, it encourages these people to have more babies because then they have get a bigger check, and he'd like to reverse that.
Well, I know there are inequities and there's all kinds of unfairnesses in the system.
We have third generation welfare from what he has to say. We're getting third generation welfare clients. We're footing the bill for this. How long do you think this could go on? Those kids have kids, their kids have kids, and so on and so forth.
Well, I'm not denying there's a problem here, but I don't think the way to deal with it is to make it a racial issue, as David Duke is doing.
Well, how would you deal with it? Maybe I'm putting you on the spot. Maybe you need more
it's
time.
It's a social issue. It has to do with how the poor people in this country are being handled and how we handle the poor people, basically, is what it is. So that has to change.
Well, poor people, he played some of these welfare clients as having the equivalent intelligence as a mentally retarded person. I mean, I hate to use that term because I know mentally retarded people aren't necessarily stupid, but he gave them a very low IQ. And
well,
he's right. A lot of them just sit around.
Okay, well, if that is true, then what does he expect them to do?
Well, they don't have to sit around and make babies and make things worse for themselves. They're only digging themselves a deeper hole. I mean, look at me. I'm a single guy. I don't see how I could even have a wife. I mean, really, if I think about it, it would be nice to have a wife if she worked. I couldn't afford to have a wife who stayed home and did the cooking and had a house.
Okay. Well, it seems to me in this case you need education, and if these people are incapable of being educated, obviously they're the people around them have to kind of take care of them. That's the way it is in most other countries. Now, education only comes from a society that feels somewhat proud of itself. People are interested in learning and preserving society if in fact they're proud of it.
Yeah.
And if the people themselves can't do it, then those around them have to do it.
Well, I live in a crummy neighborhood, and I see all kinds of stuff here. I saw this neighborhood go down the tubes. I don't know how it happened, but it's gone down the tubes. There's a lot more welfare around here and this and that. This neighborhood stinks. I don't like it here, but there's not much I can do about it. There's drugs all over the place. The place is becoming like Far Rockaway. I mean,
Well, things can change. I mean, even if they are bad,
they change for the better.
Things go both
know,
ways.
But I'm not blaming that on minorities or colors because I'm not a prejudiced person. I'm not. Because I have a lot of friends that are all different kinds of people from all over the world. But you get a lot of lower class minorities, if you know what I mean, in the area. And they don't seem to have any sense of value or concern for other people's property. Like when I was a kid, I didn't throw rocks at kids at other people's cars or just things like that. It's just disrespect for other people's rights. I didn't do those things, and I see that a lot.
Well, that goes with the pride, you know. If you don't feel pride in your neighborhood, you'll throw rocks at things.
Graffiti on somebody's garage door, what kind of thing is that to do to somebody? I see that in this neighborhood in the summer. Things start getting like that again.
Well, if you somehow were able to watch every moment of that person's life on film, odds are you'd understand why they did it.
Well, how
but
about
there's no
life?
Way. Well, obviously, they would know the same thing if they knew who you were. But the thing is, we don't take the time to find out who we are when we're from different backgrounds.
Look, there's
that's
a
the problem. I'm not saying it's your fault.
You can go there and you can read books and you can learn things. You don't have to do those things. I did that when I was a kid. I learned a lot of trades that way. I can never be trapped in one trade because I spent a lot of time in the library when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
How to fix cars. Learned about electronics.
Right, but you see, that doesn't necessarily make you a better person. It means that you might have been brought up. You might have been brought up in a better way for the kind of person you want
to
be.
Nobody told me to do it. I just did it. I could see that I'm going to get older someday, and I'm going to have to make good for myself. So
uh-huh.
I did these things. There's no excuse for people doing the things they do. Like that, I don't think you can't blame.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but I'm just saying there are things that you probably don't understand. I'm not saying they're right or you're wrong, but there's all kinds of factors here, and the people that you say are going around showing no disrespect, don't write them off. They're not necessarily horrible people. You just might not understand exactly what they've been through to make them what they are now, and then they're not unreachable. There's different rules.
Some of them are. You're right. Some of them are unreachable, I would say, but some of them have potential. Some are unreachable, though. Some people are going to be criminals for the rest of their lives.
Well, I would say the ones that are completely unreachable are ones that have never... people have never tried to reach, I think the less people try to reach out to you, the more unreachable you'll eventually get. This is something that we can extend to other cultures as well, you know, foreign cultures as well as the different cultures in our own society.
Are you an ACLU card carrier? You sound like...
I don't carry cards because I always lose
them. I mean, it's good. I like what you're saying. It's well and good in the ideal, but I really don't think it works in reality.
Well,
everyone's reality
is different, you see.
There's some people you just can't trust. You can't turn your back on certain people because
Well, that's true, but I would only say that on an individual basis to people that you really know. You know, I don't think you can say you can't trust this person unless you know that person inside out, and you know that you can't trust them. You know, but if you're generalizing about strangers or people because of the way they live or work or act, even. That's not being fair. You're not getting the whole picture.
Well, how did you turn out the way you did? How come you're such a good guy?
It was a fluke.
It
wasn't meant to be.
Okay. We've got to give some other people a chance.
Yes, we have a whole bunch of patient callers here, so I want to thank you for calling and getting me started on this whole interesting
conversation. I know. I always start trouble, don't I?
Yeah, well, you know, that's what we're here for, to start trouble.
Okay, Eric. Thanks for your time.
Okay.
Bye.
632-6901. You can start some trouble by calling us at that number. We're WUSB in Stony Brook. Your program is Brain Damage. We're on until midnight. Start all kinds of trouble as long as you don't have casualties, serious casualties. I think it's pretty cool. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
How you doing? This is Frank, and I'm in Stony Brook.
Frank in Stony Brook. How are you?
Good, good. I was going to comment about that Soviet Union thing.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
The last guy talked for so long, I didn't want to get off the topic or anything.
No, that's okay, because we for people who have just tuned in, we played a piece from Radio Moscow, Moscow Mailbag, answering all kinds of questions from the United States, a tape that we got directly from them. What was the comment you had?
Gorbachev, right?
Yeah.
I think he's a CIA agent.
I've wondered about that, because this guy starts leading the country, and he sounds almost like Reagan, you know, the things he's saying. We have to stop being so oppressive. We have to stop jamming Radio Liberty. We've got to start, you know, inviting Pepsi and Pizza Hut over here, and capitalism isn't so bad. We're puzzled over here. The people in high power over in this country, I think, are gasping for breath because they don't know how to react to this. It's like everything they asked for is suddenly coming true, and they don't have anything to object to.
Right, and especially like when Brezhnev died,
uh-huh.
Then they had Andropov, and then, you know, he mysteriously died.
Uh-huh.
Chernenko
died.
They got rid of him. That was... going on there.
Do you think that...
I think they planted Gorbachev, you know, in the 50s. They planted him in the... in the Soviet Congress or whatever they have over there. You know, they were...
Well, it's certainly, you know...
life to get up to this, you know.
My hat's off to to somebody who could actually pull something like that off. That's pretty incredible. But do you think this suspicion is filtering through the Soviet Union?
I don't know, but like with that tape you played before?
Yeah.
We're all open now and, you know, glasnost. I mean, do you think those guys believe that? Do you think that's really going on?
Well, you know, I've listened to that program for years now, before glasnost was even whispered. They always tried to make it seem like they were open and kind of chummy, you know, and all the things in the Soviet Union, you would understand, they're not as bad as everyone says they are. We're like you in many ways. But you see, I think that was true. I think the Soviet people are like us in many ways. We just couldn't see through all the rhetoric. Now maybe the rhetoric is dying down a little bit, and the natural similarities are showing, because they've always been there. So, the people aren't really changing. It's just the way that the government is covering the people. You know, that's changed a bit.
Changed a lot.
Quite a bit. I don't know where it's going. Gorbachev has quite a bit of opposition. But one thing is for sure, this is something that 100 years from now people are going to point to as a very significant development. This is probably more significant even than the Russian Revolution, because the changes are just so staggering. Imagine if he does get everything he wants.
You know, what was that last comment that guy made on a tape? They asked him what eventually the Soviet Union was looking for. And he said something like perfect democracy or whatever. I forgot what it was.
I I don't recall exactly what, but I imagine a form. I mean, they call it the German Democratic Republic, Eastern Germany. They North Korea is called democratic. So, I mean, they have different definitions for the word.
Said they were democratic.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. They've always said that, but
that's true.
Well, why should it be true now?
The democracy doesn't necessarily mean, you know, capitalism or the same kind of thing that we're pursuing.
Yeah, I don't want to sound negative because I heard Ali North talking about this once and it really turned me off.
Uh-huh.
He was like the first person I saw to stand up, and it would be Ali North, and say something like, "Well, these Soviets, we can't really trust them.
Uh-huh.
They're making this all up."
Well, now that would be something too. You know, the possibility that Gorbachev is a CIA agent is one scenario, but another scenario is that the Soviets are really up to something, and this is they're getting us to bite somehow. But what's going to happen? You know, what's a possible scenario here? What could they be up to?
I can't really believe that, the president really believes it as much as he says he believes it. I think, you know, they probably sit around and discuss this a lot and say, well, do we really believe what's going on, or do we just want to go along with it for public relations? Maybe they're in it together. Who knows?
I think there's a lot more going on together than we're led to believe, sure. It's, two superpowers, three superpowers even, if you include China, and they were included as a superpower in the 70s. That seems to have dropped off a bit in the 80s.
Yeah, I noticed that. I saw, didn't Gorbachev meet with the Chinese people?
Yeah, he's calming things down over there, too. Glasnost is working in all different directions, and Soviet-Chinese relations are much better than they were before.
Okay.
About the only people that aren't getting along with anybody are the Albanians still, and that's... I keep saying to people that you got to watch that. You got to watch that. That's where the trouble's going to start.
Could be.
Yeah. So we'll have to, much as I hate to say it, we'll have to just wait and see and listen to what they have to say in the future.
All right. Well, thanks.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye.
Hi. 632-6901. Plenty of open lines here. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
About the thing before about racism and everything.
Uh-huh.
I really don't think the problem is in racism. I think it's in who we're taxing.
Is in what?
Who we're taxing. We're taxing the people with lower incomes with more, you know, for more taxes than we are the richer people. And then, Japanese are coming over here with free trade, and, they're just taking all our business. You know?
Yeah. What do you see as a solution?
I'm taxing the Japanese and the richer people. You know, the people that got money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the Japanese are simply taking advantage of the way the system here doesn't work. They're making quality items, and they're using our system to beat us by offering it at a lower price. You know, they're not breaking any rules, really. I don't think, unless I misunderstand the situation. But as far as taxing the poor, yes, you're right. The poor are being taxed unfairly.
Yeah.
Have a room full of enthusiastic people there, huh?
Yeah.
Anything else you have to say?
Not really, except that, you know, I just hope it really works out with the Russians.
Well, it has to, you know?
Yeah.
If it doesn't, we're all in a sinking boat together.
Okay, so I guess I'll listen to you next time, too.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Our number is 632-6901. Take a couple more calls, and then we'll go to another story that I've got in front of me. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Oh, I'm on.
Wait, is he on? Yes, he is on. You are on, yes. Go ahead.
I thought I'd be hanging on forever.
Forever is a relative term, but people have hung on for many, many days.
Yeah, I've been hanging on for a while.
Well, we all got to hang together.
Yeah, well, I think, I want to talk about the Soviet Union.
Okay, go ahead and talk about the Soviet Union. See if I care.
Yeah, I think, you know, the arms race is really going to wind down starting from now because it's, you know, it's such a terrible drain on both our countries. And, that's why there is no money for all these social programs and whatnot, you know, that could be done here because, you know, if we just had a third of what the military gets, you could see some real results.
Oh, sure. I'll bet they could find a cure for AIDS tomorrow if they pumped in a third of the military budget.
Well, they could do that and, you know, a whole lot of other things, because that's relatively cheap, you know. Because I don't know what the social budget gets, but I don't think it equals the military one.
No. If the money was poured into the space program, we'd
make
strides there. And that's one thing the Soviets have done that that makes us look like fools.
Yeah, you know, I'm not saying we totally eliminate the military overnight, but, you know, I mean, we could, you know, get by in a less hostile world with, you know, less of a military.
Certainly true. Let me ask you something. There's all this talk these days of disarmament and cutting back on the weapons race, the arms race. Do you think all those movements in the early 80s helped? Do you think all these anti-nuclear demonstrations all over Europe and some in the United States, do you think that might have sent a message to both the Soviet Union and the United States, and that it really might have worked?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure it did a lot to popularize the idea and, make a climate where it's less hostile between, you know, like people over here might, you know, consider that the Russians aren't, you know, maniacs or something, you know, or as bad as they were under Stalin and all that.
Yeah.
But I think what it is that it's just such a tremendous drain on the country that, you know, the people high up have finally realized that, you know, you can't go on forever. It's just going to bleed us, you know, white, literally.
Well, I'm sure it was more of a drain on the Soviets because they don't have all the
Yeah, it's much more of a drain on them because they have a much less efficient economy.
And that's probably why they pushed harder, and I hope also because they saw the lunacy of pushing this arms race. Where could it possibly go?
It's true. Then another thing is that, all along, all throughout the Cold War, we've been vastly more powerful than they have because, you know, it's not only been us, but it's been all of our European allies and the Japanese that could potentially, you know, come together against them. So it's like, you know, they've had a paranoid element all along. But, I was wondering, I thought you were going to bring up the death penalty because I think that's coming up in Albany this week, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, do they have enough votes to override Cuomo?
I don't know. I think it's pretty close. You know, they're trying to get, a few key people who aren't really decided yet.
Well, you know, I've always had misgivings about the death penalty under any circumstance. It makes you wonder where the society is heading when one by one these states are voting to ratify the death penalty again. Seems like we're turning into a more bitter society.
I don't think it would be such a bad idea to bring back the death penalty for some things.
Well, you know, it's very hard to argue this point, and I've done it many times. We're not going to change anybody's minds here. If you think that somebody deserves to die for a certain crime, you're going to continue to believe that. But I don't know. Somehow I just feel that we don't have that right, even though it may appear that we do, you know, for certain horrible crimes. Just somehow killing somebody, it just seems like hypocrisy somehow.
I don't know. I think some crimes you should pay for your life. It really... You know, I think the justice really demands it almost.
Well, you know, it's easy when it's something like murder, okay? But
yeah, I'm talking not a robbery or something, but, you know, a terrible crime. Sure.
How about something like being a spy, okay?
Spies, I think they usually exchange them now.
Right, but
war crime.
It has been common in the past when somebody is accused of. Not being faithful to their own country, right? Like the Rosenbergs. People say, the majority of people said then, and might even say today, that somebody like that does not deserve to live. Now, suddenly you're turning away from murder, which is obviously something horrible, and looking at something that is really a matter of opinion. You know, if somebody says to themselves, I don't agree with this country, and I'm going to do everything I can to hurt it, you know, that's something that you might not agree with, and it might not be comparable to the rules of society. But is that something that we should kill somebody for?
No, I don't feel that is. But some crimes, I mean, you deserve to die. Like look at those Nazis; they executed at Nuremberg. If they deserved to die, that was justice. They sent millions of people to their graves. They murdered millions. They deserved to die. And they should, and it was right that they did hang.
Well, as a human being, I'd probably agree with you.
And when you think about it, whether it's one murder or millions, does it really matter if you're going to just, snuff out somebody's life like that? That's what I wanted, there should be, you should pay, if you're going to do something like that. Look at that guy who just had his, 13-year-old girl murdered.
Uh-huh.
But they haven't even arrested those people.
Uh-huh.
Whoever did that guy should pay the highest penalty you can.
That's in fact the story that I was going to go into next. I'm very glad you threw that my way because
haven't even made an arrest. I mean, to somebody.
That is fascinating.
Murder some child like that. You know what that does? I mean, you not only did you take a life, her parents. The people who love that girl. You know what that must feel?
Oh yeah, I can't imagine.
Whoever did that, it's the same thing. Whether you're Himmler or Eichmann or the guy that did that, you're a murderer.
But whether or not we execute the people responsible, don't you want to know why this happened? I know I'm.
Oh yeah, I do.
That's something
why.
That
I'm evil.
I'm dying of curiosity. Well, what makes somebody evil?
Who knows? People do evil things for all kinds of reasons. It's something in everybody. Everybody has the potential to be evil.
But what brings it out? Don't you think we should understand what brings that out, and that might be more effective in
but they've
stopping?
Been studying it for years. Some people are just, who knows? It depends. It's not just that you're poor or anything. Some people are just, like I know plenty of, people that are criminals, that came from, good homes, good mom, There was no shortage of money or anything, and some people just turn out bad for some reason. You'll even see that with like a family, a big family. Sometimes it'll just be one kid that just turns out wrong, some strange reason.
That's what I'm getting at, that strange reason. That's something that we have to, I think we're capable of understanding.
Nobody knows, but they've been studying it for so long.
Uh-huh.
It's just like a character flaw.
I don't know how they've really been studying it, if they've been effective.
Some people just seem to lack, a conscience, really. Look at that guy Bundy,
Uh-huh.
Guy did what that guy lacked a conscience. That's what it was, He wasn't crazy. He wasn't a raving lunatic. He was a highly intelligent guy. But that's what he did. He just had no conscience. He did what he wanted to do.
Well, I have to admit I didn't shed very many tears for Bundy, but still, at the same time, I thought it was horrible that people were celebrating, that's...
No cause to celebrate, but it...
But people are celebrating, and it seems to be a disturbing trend where, you put the head on a spear or something to satisfy the crowds. It's not a healthy stage, and I think we should try to avoid this.
Well, what else are you going to do? It's true. Prison, death penalty,
okay.
Nothing deters people, really.
When John Lennon was shot, probably people in my little group were more upset than anybody else. And people here at the radio station were in tears for weeks. But of all the people that I was in contact with at that time, I don't remember anybody saying, I want to see that guy killed. It was just, what a horrible thing. Of course the guy will be taken out of circulation in some way, put in prison. But the way it was handled by the people who were affected, I didn't see any cry for revenge, And it wouldn't have made any of us feel better.
I don't know.
So I think that's an interesting case. You don't always have to see blood to feel better about losing somebody you care about.
Yeah, that is true.
You just have to make sure that the person isn't going to hurt anybody else.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that isn't a high enough price to pay.
Well, I can tell you, speaking personally, anything that happened to him wouldn't make me feel good at all. I just want to forget about the person completely. But that's that's my personal reaction to something like that.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, I do want to get into this story, so thanks for calling in for getting us started on this. Our number is 632-6901. Just going to go into a little bit of detail on the Harville killing, which took place about a week ago in Valley Stream, Long Island. This is from yesterday's Newsday, saying that Nassau County police had been confident that they could quickly solve the murder of 13-year-old Kelly Tinyas, and that's the way I'm going to pronounce the name from here on. I'm not sure if that's the correct way to pronounce the name, but I'm going to hope it is. A police source said on Thursday that the department was going back to square one in its investigation. The police have stepped up efforts to talk to people in the neighborhood, at the school, friends, anyone who may know something about any of the people involved, the source said. Of course, Tinius's mutilated body was found in the basement of a neighboring house on a week ago, actually, last Saturday. On Thursday, a police source said they still considered as suspects two brothers who live in the house, 14-year-old John J. Golub and 21-year-old Robert Golub. This is a fascinating case. This happened a week ago, and they still don't know who did it. And, of course, they don't know why. It's incredible. I'd like to hear some feedback from people listening, if they have any thoughts or feelings on the matter, because this is certainly something that a lot of us on Long Island and surrounding areas are talking about, because it's just such a horrible thing. And you take a typical neighborhood like this suburban street in Valley Stream, and what happened to the best of my knowledge, from what I've read in newspapers, this girl was in her home babysitting her brother, 13-year-old girl, and she receives a phone call allegedly from a neighborhood youth, 14 years old. She leaves her house, goes to his house. He's there. His brother, his 21-year-old brother, is there, and two of their friends are there watching TV or doing something. And from that point on, nobody knows what happened, except that her mutilated body is found the next day in their basement. And to this day, no arrests have been made. Nobody knows what happened or why. Why is probably the biggest question on my mind. How could something like this happen? Why would a 14-year-old kill a 13-year-old for no apparent reason? If it was the 14-year-old, why would a 21-year-old kill a 13-year-old? And how is it that they don't have the evidence at this point to arrest anybody? Was somebody else in the house? There's all kinds of ways of looking at this. It's probably the most interesting case to come by in quite a while. Of course, there was a Solomon case about a year and a half ago where a wife disappeared and the husband was eventually found to be the killer. In fact, people were taking bets in various places around here saying he was or he wasn't. In this case, it's a bit more complex. A police source says that the cops are now following a new tack in the case. Instead of focusing on suspects, they will focus on evidence and follow the path it leads. Now get this, we're going back and pretending nobody was in the house, the source said. The police said they have run into several roadblocks in their investigation, primarily the refusal of the family attorney, John J. O'Grady, to let them re-question the Golub brothers. Now that brings up a whole other point. Is it fair for attorneys to refuse to allow questioning of prime suspects? A lot of this case is being supposedly stymied because the attorney will not let the police question the brothers. Now, is this right? And how is, if it is right, who are they protecting? And how does that protect the rest of us? We have to deal with everyone involved legally, said Nassau Police Commissioner Samuel Razzi. Unfortunately, in my opinion, there are obstructions in this case. You can't talk to a suspect or a subject. That's Nassau Police Commissioner. Police spoke with the brothers on Saturday, but have been unable to go back and ask about new elements in the case. Razzi did not condemn O'Grady. He has to do what's best for his client, he said. In an interview on Thursday, O'Grady said the brothers were innocent. That's the attorney saying that. And he denied that the family was not cooperating. He said police got a court order to obtain fingerprint and hair samples from John J. Golub and his parents, while the lawyer would have complied voluntarily. They imply we're hiding a million things. They had Robert for 16 hours. They had John for an hour and a half, who answered questions with an attorney and his parents present. And this is interesting. He also said that despite statements made to police, John did not place a call to the Tinius house on Friday afternoon. Now, speaking as a semi-expert on this kind of thing, I know that if John placed a call to that house, there would be a record of it in some form inside the phone company computer. So that seems like a very important key here. If he says he did not place a call, all they have to do is check and see if he did. And if he did, then he's lying. Or then somebody else made the call from the house. And if there is no call placed to that residence from that house on that day, at that time, then the call came from someplace else, and there's a whole other element thrown into this thing. O'Grady said that police have not asked him about questioning his clients further. Perhaps if they, the police, let us know the results of the forensic tests, I'd consider it further. I think that's fair. Among the evidence gathered by police, according to sources, is a bloody palm print. O'Grady said that on the police request for fingerprint and hair samples, they indicated that there was a latent fingerprint in blood, but that it was not Robert's. They indicate that there were hair samples on the body which were not Kelly's. That's what they're looking for. Whose hair was it? They had Robert's hair samples. I assume they've compared it, O'Grady said. Police declined to comment on a print or disclose results of forensic tests. Based on what they have been able to determine thus far, sources said police now believe the attack was almost methodical. According to investigators familiar with autopsy results and medical tests, sometime after Kelly entered the Golub home about 3:20 p.m. Friday, she was knocked unconscious by several blows to the head, probably with a fist. Kelly was then cut, probably with a World War I bayonet on the right side of her neck, a wound authorities did not believe to be fatal. The girl's clothing was then removed, and she was strangled with her bra. Investigators believe Kelly died from a combination of the beating and the strangulation. Her other clothing was found stuffed in three attaché cases. Her body was then mutilated with the bayonet and possibly with some shards of glass found in the basement, then placed in a green sleeping bag and put in a closet under the stairs. There was no struggle, and there was no evidence of rape or attempted rape. Police said they were also puzzled that there had been no attempt to remove the... And I'm sorry, but in Newsday... This seems to be happening more often. They end stories abruptly, and they don't continue them anywhere. That story just kind of ended and was never followed up anywhere else in the paper. My apologies for that. I would like to hear from some of you out there, see if you have any opinions on this bizarre case. I mean, what would make a 14-year-old kill a 13-year-old? What would make a 21-year-old kill a 13-year-old or anyone else? Was there another aspect to all of this? Is the lawyer protecting people's rights by refusing to allow the police to question them? What's your opinion? 632-6901. If you have any theories on how this case is going to turn out, I'd also like to hear from you. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Eric, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Pretty good. I lost my job tonight.
that's bad. But maybe we could get into that later, because I just spent 10 minutes reading this story. I was wondering if you might have a comment on that.
I don't know. That's just a really hard case like that they got going.
Well, now what do you think is important here? What do you think is
check the phone and see how long the fingerprints were on there and see if she actually answered the phone.
Check the phone?
Oh, no, never mind. Like, you know, I was thinking, like, when she answered the phone from those kids.
Yeah.
Phone call, see if she actually answered the phone.
Now, according to, and I guess it was her younger brother that said this, the call had come from 14-year-old John J. Golub, who was in the house at the time. Now, he was with two friends in the house who both swear that there was no way he could have left them long enough to commit this crime. So since those two kids are not suspects, according to the police, that would tend to throw the evidence over to the 21-year-old brother, who I really haven't heard anything about. It's the most bizarre case, and what's really strange is that they have not made any arrest or they have not issued any statement. And it's scary. You know, a whole neighborhood is sitting there wondering, how did this happen? Who did it? Is the killer still running around in other people's basements or what?
You don't think it was one of those kids or the older brother?
Well, I have not seen evidence, you know, strong evidence that suggests that it wasn't the older brother.
I think it was like one of them because, I mean, it'd be hard for someone to kill him and then put him in their basement.
Uh-huh.
So one of them or you know...
With the older brother, he went to the police voluntarily, spent 16 hours talking to them.
Well, yeah, but that's like an easy way out. I mean,
he submitted hair samples, fingerprints. Now, it seems to me that if he had done it, they would have found correlations there. They would have found his fingerprints, his hair samples, unless, as this other report says, it was done methodically and he had planned it out very carefully. But
yeah, that could be that. I mean, he could have thought, you know, like, about that, you know, and killed her, maybe with gloves on and all that. But, you know, if they didn't find any hair samples.
But why?
I mean,
and on top of that, why would he leave her in the basement? You know, why?
Maybe
bodies don't go away. You know, they tend to do nasty things, like, you know, stink up the whole house. There's no way
he could have
thought that would go away.
I think maybe, like, you know, I think he did it, you know, and he thought about that really good because I don't think he would have thought of it. I mean, for him to say, if he was the one to submit the hair samples, like, just to say, take hair samples of me, you know, that's kind of thinking about, you know, no one would think of that. Maybe fingerprints, but maybe he did it and he thought about that.
Well, from what I understand, he was cooperative from the beginning and he just gave the police whatever it was they asked for.
Oh, I thought maybe he just voluntarily said, "Here, have some hair samples."
I don't think it quite went like that, but it's a horrible thing for the family that whose house it occurred in too, obviously, as well as the family whose daughter was murdered.
Did they know that it happened in that house, or
I believe they do know it happened in that house because neighbors saw her entering the house. And
then it's almost like, you know,
and she was killed with a weapon that was in the house that belonged to the family. So I would say yes, it definitely occurred in the house.
I think it has to be them because like it's almost impossible for someone else, unless there was someone else in their house thinking of killing them or something, then they decided to kill her when they were out of the house. I don't know. I think it was them.
Uh huh. But them or one person. You know,
yeah.
are they covering up? You know, the thing that makes it suspicious is the way the lawyer isn't allowing the clients to be interviewed. You know, if they are innocent, then what possible harm can come from being interviewed? I mean, I know the police can put words into your mouth, but especially if a lawyer is present, I don't see why that isn't allowed. And that's one reason I just, you know, I don't go for this whole legal shenanigan that usually comes out of these things. I think people should just go and talk and say exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I can get into long arguments about that.
I think, there could have even been like another kid just in the house that no one knew about, you know.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, the kids knew about, but...
Well, you know, that's something that maybe there was somebody else in the house, but was she called by that person? You know?
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, they called her over and the kids didn't know about it and they killed her. And then,
why did she leave her house just like that to go over, leaving her brother unattended when she was supposed to be babysitting? I mean, you know, there could be 1,000 reasons for that. Who knows what was really going on? That's the fascinating aspect of this case. And, you know, the thing that really gets me is how slowly it's going. Usually they...
Long case.
Usually they figure it out by now. So, I don't know, something bizarre is going on.
How long did that start? Wasn't that like 2 weeks ago?
It was 1 week ago. One week ago today that they made that discovery. So, yeah, there's articles in the newspaper every day about it, and the neighborhood is in fear.
It just ended, like the article?
The article just, yeah.
They continued
in yesterday's Newsday, just right there on page 36, just...
It went right
to the end. No, because it already was continued from page 7, and then it just sort of went and stopped right above the obituaries. And I've noticed that a few times in both the Times and Newsday, they just sort of forget to continue an article, and it just never ends. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. If you could quickly tell us how you lost your job, then I'd like to get more people to call up, because
All right.
We have plenty of open lines, 632-6901. If folks have any feelings on this at all, it just seems, I mean, everybody's talking about it, so I just assume that a lot of people would want to call in and give their opinions. You know, I brought this up because I thought people would be interested in it, but
if
people are just recoiling in horror from the radios and they don't want to even think about it, I'll just stop talking about it, I guess. So the number is 632-6901. Now tell us about your job very quickly.
All right. Well, I was, like, really sick Thursday and Friday.
Uh-huh.
Like, I stayed home from school. And I called in work Thursday, and I said, you know, I couldn't make work. And I didn't think I was going to be sick tonight. And I usually had to work tonight, and I called in sick again.
Uh-huh.
And then the boss called me, and she said, you're we're going to have to let you go or something like that. And she told me I had a horrible attendance record, and that was like the only time that I missed work because I was sick.
You only missed work this week.
What?
You only missed work this week?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem fair.
I know, it's not. And,
maybe she has you confused with somebody else.
I'm the only stock boy, that's what's funny. I'm the only stock boy there, so
it can't hurt to just, you know, call and say, I don't think this is fair.
Well, I don't know.
It's not the end of the world.
That's what I said. She said your attendance is it's horrible, you know. And I said, well, that's ridiculous, you know. This is the only time I've taken off, and I don't think that's fair, you know. And she just said, well, I can't afford you to do that or something like that. But, you know, I don't really care because I'm only making $3.35 an hour, and I didn't really.
Well, yeah, you got to ask yourself, is it worth it, you know?
No, it's not. It's in Corum. It's not really close to my house. So, I'll get another job. She's going to call me in a week, I know it, and ask me to come back because, like, they've been looking for help, and they don't have anyone else to work there, so they're not going to have a stock boy.
You keep us posted on this because we like to follow these little stories. I'm going to go to another call, though, so we can continue talking about this this horrible case.
All right.
Thanks for calling, though.
Go ahead.
632-6901, we're talking about the mysterious murder in Valley Stream, and if you have any insight into that, please give us a call. Any thoughts or feelings? 516-632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, I can think of a couple of reasons for this going on.
Okay.
The first thing, well, is either the 14 or 21-year-old is a complete sociopathic maniac. It's possible that they could have done it just for no reason at all, or for some reason they perceived it was not really a reason at all,
uh-huh.
And they would therefore be very good at lying, because these people usually are. And so it could very well have been thought out long in advance. And the other possibility is because of this, the phone system's got to have a record of whether the call was made. So if there's some problem with that, it would imply that some larger organization is involved. And that maybe, I don't know, the Illuminati or someone had to kill her for some reason, and now they've either erased or obscured the phone record so as to make their dupe, who's this guy, Gola, more susceptible to investigation.
You see this as being part of a bigger thing, huh?
Well, I mean, it seems like it, and the phone company, is obviously they can just check it, you know, and decide the question within a matter of moments.
Right. Now, I mean, there are some older phone company switching systems that don't have the capability of telling you what number was called.
Well, there again, if that's the case, then they might have planned to do this killing in a region with such a phone system that they couldn't verify it.
Uh-huh. I have the feeling, though, that in Valley Stream, which is in Nassau County, they would have a more modern type of phone system that would have, it would be able to tell you what number was dialed on a phone.
Yeah, well, certainly, it might turn out that particular subset of the system was still old, and that's why they chose to assassinate her in that particular area.
Yeah, well, the word assassinate is kind of interesting.
It seems very, very well thought. I mean, I'm sure that there are lots of killings that go on that you never hear about.
Yeah.
Well, and some of them probably are because they silence it, but others just, you know, they never solve them. That's just the way it goes. Like this Bundy, a lot of his killings were never solved until afterwards.
That's true.
So, you know, it shouldn't be terribly surprising that they haven't solved it. I mean,
but he also, he made a fairly good effort to cover things up. You know, like he would bury them in a, you know, in a backyard or something like that.
Or it could be a I think, like with the purloined letter, you know, that the best place to hide something is the obvious place, and if you stick it in your own house, instantly everyone says, well, why would he stick it in his own house? He's not entirely, you know, if he's smart enough to carry out this killing, he wouldn't have been dumb enough to leave the body in his own house. But since he did leave in his own house, then instantly people are saying, well, he's not that dumb, but maybe he's really even smarter than they are, in that by leaving in his house, he throws evidence off of himself. Then it could be that someone else is trying to make you think that he did it by making you think that he was so clever as to implicate himself when he...
That's a very good point. You know, that's exactly the kind of logic I was hoping to,
here, but, I mean,
to get into here.
So when insane killers are involved, you know, it can get very convoluted.
No, but the thing is, though, I'm looking at this article here. It's called The Golubs, The Private Family in House Number 81. And in it, they do a fairly extensive background of the family, and there's nothing in there to indicate that they're in any way, you know, anyone in the family is insane or would do something like this.
It's I mean, why would there be? I mean,
okay, this is the extent of it. The 14-year-old John J. Golub. Some said he frightened smaller children. Several neighbors said that last summer he scared the kids with a rubber Halloween mask and matching glove. that's it, you know. That's hardly the kind of thing you would suspect somebody of murder with.
Well, not necessarily. If he's a very clever murderer, he would have been careful not to go around advertising the fact. I mean, you're not going to run around, you know, beating people up if you're planning to kill someone later on. But then again, you know, I really think that it's more likely that there's some other group that's chosen to eliminate this what's-her-name. And for all we know, all the evidence that everything you're reading in the paper, you know, I mean, do you know this Golub guy personally?
Not
even exist. This could all be a fabrication.
Well, I always say that anything could be a fabrication that you don't know personally, and even some things that you know personally could probably be a fabrication.
Anyone lives in the area who's investigated this personally, you know, have they seen police in the house? Of course, that could be made up, too. They could have told the police to go now to pretend to be investigating something.
Well, this could never end. You realize that there's all kinds of ways of looking at it, both realistic and...
I'm trying to offer a few...
An alternative view, right. That's what we're here for, to offer an alternative view. But we're going to continue asking questions, I guess.
And also, this business of Newsday cutting off articles. Did you read the book, The Illuminatus Trilogy?
No, I did not.
Oh, you really should. You might like it a lot. But there's this one thing about it where they, in this society in which it takes place, they speak of this thing called the Fnord, which is a Discordian mantra, which is just a word which is inserted into newspaper text. And it makes it so that people don't notice any text which has this word Fnord in it. And the way it works is that when kids are little, they're brainwashed into not noticing anything with the word Fnord in it. So perhaps the reason why you don't see the end of the article is there's some very critical piece of information and they're implicating the Illuminati or someone else, like the Masons, and they've Fnorded it out in some way.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that it comes right to the end of the page here and this doesn't go anywhere else. And there's
away to you.
No room for it. I could be brainwashed, I guess, but...
But it's all about.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I'll consider what you say if, in fact, this call ever took place. So I'll have to keep that in mind. But,
well, you know, I'm one of them, or you're one of them, or we're one of them.
Or nothing really exists at all. This has gotten a lot deeper than I ever thought it would. But thanks for bringing us across uncharted territory.
Yes. All right.
All right.
Easy.
Our number is 632-6901. We're talking about this very, very strange case in Valley Stream. We only have a few minutes left, so if you have some insight to share, like that caller just shared, in fact, he did call, do call up, 632-6901. We want to hear what you think. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Okay. A couple of interesting callers you had there.
Yeah, we get the interesting ones.
I just don't see what's so difficult about it, honestly.
Well, okay, why not?
The discussion about a phone call didn't necessarily have to come from the Golub's house. Could have come one of the other two friends. Why don't you come over to John Jay's house?
Right.
A little party down in the basement. Smoke some grass, hang around for a while.
Now, that's another thing that they've focused a lot of attention on. Kids who know John Jay said he smoked cigarettes and used marijuana. None of them saw this as unusual. Big deal. You know, I don't know what that has to do with...
Probably don't know a 14-year-old that hasn't.
Yeah. It's you know, if he didn't, I think that would be more suspicious.
Oh, did they test the girl for drugs?
I don't know. They haven't mentioned anything like that.
Okay.
But the thing is, the police have said very definitely these two kids, the two friends of the brothers, or at least one brother, are not suspects.
Well,
so
if
how
you've got a 14-year-old, they're not going to go advertising that a 14-year-old is a suspect.
Right, but how can they go saying that these people are not suspects when they haven't eliminated the person who they say was with them the whole time?
You know? But you don't
how do they know they're not
14-year-old,
suspects?
And they don't want to give out all their information. Just like they said, what's his name over there in Huntington when he killed his wife was not a suspect in the beginning. They knew right along it was him.
Uh-huh. What's the point of not admitting that somebody's a suspect?
Why deal out all your cards?
Well, yeah, I could see that, I guess. But, I mean, if the evidence is there, and the evidence was what got Solomon in the end...
It isn't there. That doesn't mean that he's not a suspect or that he is a suspect.
Uh-huh.
But why implicate a 14-year-old, you know, and end up with mud on your face when you don't have to?
Uh-huh. Well, it seems to me that whether or not they've done anything official or not, these people have been implicated in a horrible way.
Oh, sure.
Well, the whole family has been, and...
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're suspects. There's no doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
Whether they go out and say the police say they are or aren't, you know, really isn't a point. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. How long do you think it's going to be before something comes of this? Because
I don't think it'll be much longer. But there was a case similar to this maybe 12 years ago in Dix Hills, where they had a bunch of kids had raped a girl in the kid's basement after a little party and whatnot, and they had videotaped it and blah, 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 basically the same thing.
Was that a murder?
No, it was not a murder. It was a rape.
Okay.
But I'm saying basically the same thing, where you had a kid at his own house with a bunch of friends and a girl.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they got high, they drank a little, and one thing led to another. So you're high, one thing leads to another, you hit her, yeah, let's see what the knife does, blah, blah, blah.
Ugh. Well, it certainly is bizarre.
It certainly
is. I use that word a lot of times, I realize, but it's just not the kind of thing you expect to see, you know?
Well, you don't expect to see anything. You don't want to see a plane bombed either, but it happens.
But it's just the typical suburban block that we're all familiar with. And to expect something like this to just happen, I mean, you can feel what that neighborhood is going through right now.
Oh, sure.
And... what's this going to do to us? What is this going to make us so suspicious, saying, well, this could, you know, these horrible things could happen no matter who the people are?
Hey, it's happened before. You know, do you live your life any differently?
Not in the long run.
Okay.
But for the time surrounding these things, you think differently. And that's...
you know, it's the same old thing. It could happen to you, could happen to me, but of course it never will. It only happens to the other person.
Well, I like to say it never will, because if it does, you won't know it.
Sure.
that's why I believe we're all immortal, because
there's no way
we'd know we were dead anyway. So, you know, as long as we're alive, we're alive, so we're always alive, so we're immortal in that sense. But
I just don't think it's as complicated as everybody's making it out to be.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure after that performance from the first call, he'll be getting job offers first thing in the morning.
Yes, if in fact he did call. Well, I'm still not sure if that really happened. I'll have to check into that later on, check the phone company records. Okay, well, thanks for calling. So where are you calling from?
Center Reach.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good evening.
Our number is 632-6901. Now, usually we have bingos at this time, but there's no calls. No calls at all. No calls on line one. No calls on line two. No calls on line three, four, or five. Boy, that's something. We won't trace your call, we promise. 632-6901. Now, we only have a few minutes left. Let's see what they said in today's Newsday. Nassau police are considering asking the district attorney's office to take evidence on the murder of 13-year-old Kelly Tinius to a grand jury. Police have said they do not have enough evidence to make an arrest in the week-old case, but if a grand jury determined there was sufficient cause, it could then hand down an indictment. Police would then arrest the suspect. During a briefing yesterday, Nassau Detective Sergeant Robert Edwards said that although police are starting to have some of our evidence come together, there still isn't enough to make an arrest. He refused to specify what evidence the homicide squad has collected. Consultation between police and prosecutors in criminal cases is routine, but presenting evidence to a grand jury before an arrest is made could indicate the case is not as strong as police had initially believed, authorities said. And, again, police reiterated that the pace of their investigation has been slowed by their inability to re-interview John J. Golub, who is 14, and his brother Robert, who is 21, who live at the house where Kelly died. The police have said the brothers are suspects. Police spoke with both brothers once, but the suspect's lawyer has since refused to allow police to talk to them. The Golubs have admitted they were at home at the time, but say they never saw Kelly. And, let's go to the phone. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Eric. This is Adam.
Hi, Adam. This is Eric.
All right. Yeah. Okay. That the promise about, you know, not chasing the call is what got me to call. You know, otherwise I don't know about it.
Could you repeat that?
That, you know, when you promised before, you know, you said I promised I won't chase your calls.
Uh huh.
You know, that's the only reason I did. Otherwise, you know, forget it.
Okay, well, now that you know I'm not going to trace the call, do you have anything relevant to say?
Yeah, the whole thing is, weird is a good word to describe it.
What's the word?
Weird.
Weird, yes. Weird is definitely a word to describe this.
What it seems like, I don't know, is like that they were upstairs and they really didn't know about it. You know, it said in the newspaper article that in that, you know, community, people usually leave their doors unlocked and stuff.
Yeah, and that happens in any community. Yeah, you leave your door unlocked sometimes.
What I think could have happened. Somebody could have called her, right?
Uh-huh.
And told her to go to that house. They could have been waiting, you know,
But would she have gone to the house if it was a voice that she wasn't very familiar with?
Yeah, but according to the article, she didn't know him that well.
But why would she go? I don't understand why she would go to the house. The call was so quick in nature, according to the younger brother, that it would have to be something that she either knew about before or something urgent that she had to respond to immediately. Another thing that I'm wondering about was the older brother. Supposedly the 14-year-old and his two friends were upstairs in a room. I haven't seen anywhere. Where was the older brother? Was he in that same room? You know, apparently he was in the house someplace, but I don't know exactly where.
They never said he was. Maybe they said, you know, snored right before they said where he was. They said snored, he was in the bathroom. And then...
Oh, okay. Oh, there's that word again. Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I can't seem to remember it now.
Yeah, I can't either.
And then, so it could have been somebody else who called her and told her to go over there. I don't know, something could have happened and could have convinced her to go over there.
Well, do you think we'll have an answer next week at this time?
Could be.
You're not sure?
I don't know.
Okay. May I go to one more call? Thanks for calling. Okay, I don't want to end on that kind of note. Any other call? 632-6901. We only have a couple of minutes left. I don't even know what that was. Strange circumstances indeed. And this, you have to admit one thing. This radio show started by listening to Radio Moscow, and we end with a bizarre murder in our backyards that still has not been solved or is anywhere close to being solved, apparently. Who knows? Let's hope this is a reasonable call. No, it's not. It's the same call again. I'm not even going to take any more calls. This has been Brain Damage. Here's another one. Maybe I'll take this one. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, reasonable.
What precedent is the lawyer using to prevent the police from questioning these two kids?
What is the excuse the lawyer is using?
Yes, what legal precedent is he setting? Questioning.
In an interview yesterday, the lawyer said the brothers were innocent. He denied the family was not cooperating. This is what he said. They imply we're hiding a million things. They had Robert for 16 hours. They had John for an hour and a half, who answered questions with an attorney and his parents present. O'Grady said that police have not asked him about questioning his clients further. He says that if they let them know the results of the forensic test, he'd consider having his clients talk to the police. He says he thinks that's fair. I don't really see what the reason is. I mean, if they have nothing to hide, they should talk to the police. So I can't really answer that. Do you think that's unfair, what he's doing?
Well, I just can't see how he can step in and deny access.
Uh-huh. Well, that's quite a common tactic, from what I understand. Don't forget the Tawana Brawley case. Lawyers stepped in and would not allow her to cooperate. It's a common ploy, and one that a lot of people don't think is fair and stands in the way of justice. But then if you think police overstep their boundaries sometimes in trying to get confessions, maybe it's a good balance. I don't know.
But I think, I mean, having a lawyer present is one thing, but, you know, blocking access to information is, you know, doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems like something is being hidden, and that can only throw more suspicion their way. So in a way, that tactic is kind of counterproductive. So do you have any suspicions or predictions on this case?
I think that the kids are having some fun and just got a little too much out of hand and didn't realize the end result of their tactics.
Well, I can't imagine what kind of fun could could result in something horrible like this. Plus, the way they are describing it now, they say that the thing appears to have been planned out in advance. So that would tend to sway me away from thinking it was just some fun that got out of hand, you know. Whatever it is, it's scary, and, you know, we'll be a lot more comfortable when we know what happened and why. Any other thoughts, sir?
That's it.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
And that is it for tonight. Another edition of Brain Damage is successfully logged into history. Next week at this time, actually next week starting at 9 o'clock, we have a special Shoreham Perspective, a program dealing with yours and my favorite subject, the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant. This may be the last time we ever talk about it because it might not be around much longer. And won't we be sorry about that? And, of course, next week we begin our special WUSB Radiothon. For the first time ever in our history, we will be asking you, our listeners, for funding support. We'll be asking you to support us in whatever way you can. We'll have all kinds of special items made available that can help, I guess, soften the blow a bit of donating some money. You'll get a nice T-shirt or other nice surprises that we are digging up. So please stay tuned for information about that. If you want to be a part of the Radiothon, basically what that involves is coming down to the radio station, volunteering some time, answering phones, and just sort of helping out overall. It's a lot of fun. We've never done it before, but we know it's a lot of fun. It's other stations have done it, and it doesn't have to be a horrible begathon like some radio stations do. We're trying to keep it away from that.
See if I may add, Eric, you actually...
Brother Nick has shown up out of nowhere and scared me to Dickens.
I'm sorry. You actually get a chance to meet USB personnel.
Yes, that's certainly true.
Which is worth the price of admission.
Tell them what you think of them.
It is. It's great. Better
see their face.
Absolutely. It's great. I know I'm a little worried about it, but then I'll get over it.
So if you want to volunteer time, if you want to be a part of the Radiothon, and it's a learning experience, and you really feel good doing something like this, just because it'll be different, you know? There's a special number you can call to leave your name and phone number so we can get back to you and have you come in. That number is 632-6498, area 516-632-6498, and it will also give you a bit more information about the Radiothon. Again, that's starting next Saturday and running until the Saturday after that. And we're trying to raise money for a new transmitter, and we're trying to improve the signal of WUSB so that... wherever you are in our listening range, you'll be able to get us better. But to do that takes money. And what better way to get it than through the people that mean the most to us, the people that are a real big part of this radio station, our listeners. Again, if you need more information on the Radiothon, 632-6498. And be with us again. We'll be back here at Brain Damage in 2 weeks, but the Shoreham program next week will be fascinating, to say the least. And there'll be all kinds of other special programs on. If you need more information about that, call us up here at the radio station. Eric Corley here saying goodnight. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Brother Nick on WUSB in Stony Brook.
Hi, this is Beth